If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's that time of the week to talk to Mr. Stan Weber because it's a football Friday, Friday the 13th, but don't be scared. The Stan's going to talk you through it. Good morning, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's the 13th of September. Mm. I don't worry about Friday the 13th. I just worry about what month it is. And if it's September, right, you know it's football time.
Are you excited about your trip to Mississippi State?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time you check off another university to go watch either a big-time college basketball game or especially a football game, it's nice. And I haven't been to Mississippi State for either yet. And obviously, in non-conference to see big-time matchups, SEC, Big 12. We talked about that last week at Mizzou, how much fun it was that West Virginia was coming into town.
That was fun.
And then when you get to go to the South, there's even more specialness to it, I think, in K-State going down there. It just didn't happen very often where you see matchups like this on home field. You see some neutral site games, but actually see K-State running around on the field at Mississippi State is going to be a lot of fun.
Are you curious to find out why it's called Stark Vegas?
You're going to answer that for me?
Well, Jake's the one that reminds us of that. What, I mean, do you know when you go there? I assume you get
thrilling. I mean, it's as thrilling as Las Vegas,
right?
I mean,
that's what they say. Well,
Stark Vegas. I've been there a couple times. I've worked a couple games at that. I believe they call the place the Hump.
What advice can you give to Stan Weber? That's a seasoned veteran on the other side of that glass, Stan.
I believe the hotel I stayed in had slot machines in the actual lobby.
Yeah. Did you sleep in the lobby?
Nope. I didn't sleep.
No, but you've talked pretty glowingly about your trip to Stark Vegas.
It's been a while, but yeah, I mean, it's an interesting place. It's a college town, and, you know, you find a little, can't remember, there's some decent barbecue spots down there, but I've done a couple basketball games for CBS down at the Hump.
So will you go, will you guys get a chance to go out and have dinner tonight? Like, what will you're going to leave this afternoon? What will the schedule be when you get to Mississippi State?
Well, I think the schedule is going to be a little bit different and a little more exciting to talk about. I'll talk about a normal schedule first. You mm-hmm. know, you take off at 3 o'clock. It's a business trip completely. Back when I played, they let us go visit things. We went to the Grand Ole Opry when we went to Nashville to play Vanderbilt. We went to a horse farm and ate lunch at a super cool horse farm when we played Kentucky. You know, we got a little bit of the atmosphere. We were student athletes. Now it's all business, man. You go to the hotel. If the coach wants to walk on the field for a second, you can. But most coaches now fly in, go to the hotel, and the players are contained right there with meetings. If they're going to watch a movie, it's all in-house. We used to go out to the movie theaters at home and away, and relax on Friday night. Not now. I mean, if they do that, they're going to put a video up in a certain room. They're going to meet, watch tape, relax, get on their routine, eat at the right times. For us, we normally end up with a schedule very close to the same. We don't get cars and things like that, and usually we eat nearby. So depending on where the hotel is, it's usually the most boring place to walk over. You might try to get to a sports bar. Very bad to say, hey, I went to, you know, fill in the blank. In Texas, if your team stays downtown, you can say, hey, I went to Austin. I went to 6th Street. It's awesome. If they hold you out in the suburbs, you say, it looks like every other town in America. At Mississippi State, I believe we're going to be in town at a hotel, so I really believe I'm going to get to see some Friday night atmosphere, go out, eat what the locals want to eat, see what's going on. You know, you don't want to, it's not like I want to hang out at the bars that much, but if there's a place where you can walk through in Aggieville, you know, I will be able to see it this time.
Get after it, Stan!
But most of the time, no, it's just hotel and football.
So. Will you search out a TV to check out Friday Night Football, Kansas at Boston College?
Well, I kind of have a reputation, and not to live up to, it's just like a disease. You know, I'm pretty much know that there are three big games tonight. The problem I'm going to have is, will they have the ACC network? Where am I going to go that they have ACC network? I asked that at my house. I got two different sources. I got more than that. I got like four different sources, and I don't get the ACC network. So
really?
I haven't seen anything that the ACC network has shown, so I can't go over to Nate's house tonight and watch KU, but obviously I want to see what's going on.
You have a standing invitation to my house to come over and watch ACC Network anytime you want.
Well, I appreciate it. It's the first invite.
His provider login.
I don't know that you can watch it if you're not in the house with the Wi-Fi. And some of that's Spectrum cable. Only certain channels work when you're not in the house. But Yeah, I've got the, I don't know what sports package I have on the Spectrum cable. It's probably because I'm the soccer nerd that wants to have the weird channels to carry other soccer games.
He wants it all.
But I watched ACC. I didn't know I had it either. And I wanted to watch that Jordan Love kid from Utah State. It was on a Friday night a couple weeks ago. And they were playing Wake Forest, and it was on the ACC network. So I just need to search one more time.
Yeah. You know, one of my sources has – I have the SEC network on both sources. I have Big Ten on one of them. I got Pac-12 on none.
Yeah, nobody has Pac-12.
I just can't get the Pac-12.
Apparently.
And the ACC seems blanked out. You know, I don't get to sit around on Saturdays and check this out, guys. Right. I've not been at home
Saturday. Come on, man. Right.
So I'm just searching around saying, do I have it? I haven't found it yet. So I'm a little bit nervous. Will I see the KU game tonight or not? And it's kind of sad, but normally I would not miss the game. Hopefully it's on at a place where we can go eat and watch some football at the same time.
Tune in Sports Radio 810 WHB. Will it be available on the app? Can we get it on the app?
Well, I doubt it. No, I doubt it. They don't allow it, but you can stream it on like KUAthletics.com.
There you go.
You know, for free. I listen to the games sometimes on that on my phone when I'm out doing yard work and
Jake
stuff like that.
Jake says he has a couple of illegal ways for you to watch it if you want to talk to him in the commercial break.
Not on TV.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that on the air, but we'll take a break and have a quick conference with Jake about that on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. I was making my breakfast, Stan.
It is breakfast time, no doubt about it.
Stan Weber is in studio. Okay, let's get into this, because that's the marquee matchup for the local schools, Kansas State at Mississippi State. Kansas State looked very impressive. Their shutout victory over Bowling Green. But Mississippi State, it's a different Mississippi State than what we saw come to Manhattan last year. And so I know that you've researched Mississippi State. What kind of challenge will this be for Kansas State tomorrow, 11 a.m. kickoff?
Well, it's going to be a lot different than last year. That's the place to start because a lot of fans looked in and said, hey, can't wait to see Mississippi State roll into Manhattan. Will it be like it was in the 2014-13 era when Auburn came in on a Thursday night and K-State looked like the better team but missed field goals? No, Mississippi State looked like a dominating physical mismatch, but you know that they had three first-round NFL draft picks on the defensive side. A defensive tackle, a defensive end, and then Abrams, a safety that's not going to be available for the Raiders, but a physical presence out there. They were the best defense in the country last year. In points given up, they never gave up more than 28 points in any game. They dominated, and the rushing, I mean the total offense, they stopped everybody. Those three guys graduated, and they have not replaced them with NFL first-round picks. Now, they're good, but there are no real lead dogs for Mississippi State. There's no guy out there where you look and say, he's the one that you have to block or you're going to be in big trouble. They got 11 athletic guys out there. They're coming on. They play good, but they're not perfect. You know, they don't make perfect tackles. They don't fight off blocks perfectly. They're not in their gaps perfectly. So it's going to be very interesting. Shoup, the defensive coordinator, loves to bring the blitz, cause havoc, weak corner blitzes, strong safety blitzes, blitz off the slot, X blitzes by the middle linebackers. They'll come, but basically they use a four-man front. They mix it up with zone and man, bring some blitzes, and they're very physical on the defensive side, but they are not dominating. It's going to be very interesting to battle with K-State's offense, which I'm kind of like the Swiss Army knife. They are just going to attack you here and there and take little advantages of you and frustrate you and keep moving the football down the field. And Courtney Messingham, who's really smart as an offensive coordinator, if he's able to find out where you have a weakness or if he can get a matchup he likes, K-State can take advantage of it. Obviously, Skylar Thompson's got to play at a high level. And, guys, he has played 2 weeks in a row. Last week when we talked about this, I said Skylar was unbelievable in week one, took that advancement from sophomore year to junior year. Could he do it week after week? Well, still time to prove that. But he looked great in the next game, too. I'm talking putting the ball accurately where it should be, comfortable in the pocket, movement in the pocket like an NFL guy just to get away from the rush, runs to throw, all those kind of things. And then when Mississippi State gets the football, their running back, has gone over 100 yards in both games. He is big and strong. They have an unusual style. See if this makes sense. Hey, on TV, it'll be pretty easy. The shotgun snap comes back to the quarterback. As the zone read, the running back, if he's on the left, he gets the handoff going to the right. And where does he usually go? Off tackle, right? They get the handoff, and he plants his foot and goes straight up the middle or even cuts back. Doesn't read the cutback. It's designed. It really gives the linebackers a tough read. Day after day, you're used to saying, oh, if he gives the ball, I need to move over a couple slots and meet the runner, and he cuts back. And Hill is big and strong, a guy that ran for over 200 yards last year against K-State, had a 50-plus yard run, had a touchdown reception. K-State fans know about him, number 8. He'll be the guy. Can K-State stop him? That's a big, 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 big issue in this game. And K-State's, I think, run only 85 defensive plays this year. They may be on the field for 85 plays in a college football game tomorrow.
Looking at that first round from last year you talked about, the number 19 overall pick was Jeffrey Simmons, the defensive tackle. He went to Tennessee. He's out for the year, by the way.
Wow. And isn't I hadn't heard
play.
That one.
Yeah, so he didn't even play in week one for Tennessee. And then you mentioned, you know, Jonathan Abram, the first round pick at safety for the Raiders, and now, you know, looks like he's out for the year. And then that Jeffrey, I'm sorry, Montez Sweat, picked by Washington Redskins at number 26 overall. So that's crazy. Three first round picks on the defensive side of the ball that they kind of try to replace. So
we've got Stan Weber in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Evan says, tell Stan to go to Sweet Peppers Deli in Stark Vegas. It's great. So
Sweet Peppers Deli.
Stan.
So there's and tell him that I know him, or is this just go?
Evan sent me. See if that works for you. I don't know.
Evan sent me.
Right.
Got it.
Sweet Peppers Deli, that sounds very good in Stark Vegas.
You are watching things all the time, all night long. You're watching Twitter. You know what's going on, social media. Can you tell me who's going to play quarterback? Because, I mean, Mississippi State has more options than any team alive. One of the big things about tomorrow's game, maybe I'll find out tomorrow. You know, tonight in town, because the students seem to always know what's going on.
Right.
But do you know the quarterback situation? Tommy Stevens is a guy that transferred from Penn State, because Joe Moorhead's a Penn State guy. Mm-hmm. When he got there last year, Nick Fitzgerald was Colin Klein Jr., number 7, big, scrappy guy who can make every third down run, not the greatest passer. But it was not a real match between the two of them. The coach wanted to throw. He wants Penn State's offense, and he had Mississippi State's offense, and it was a little bit of a mismatch. So Tommy Stevens comes in this summer, wins the starting job. So he's throwing the ball well, running the offense perfectly, and Mississippi State looks like a different team. But he got hit on his shoulder and left the game last week against Southern Mississippi. Don't know how bad he's hurt, and he might play. If he doesn't play, they went to a freshman, Garrett Schrader. He was not as effective, but he has all the size and everything. He was recruited to Penn State by Joe Moorhead, but when he moved to Mississippi State, he went in, so he's his first recruit. Loves that freshman. They got another freshman, Jalen Maiden, they like, but he hadn't been in the game. And what makes this all interesting is Keaton Thompson started last year and looked like the next quarterback, no doubt about it, more of a running style, but a dual threat. He was absolutely the second-string guy last year and ready to be the starter. He got mad when Tommy Stevens won the job. He went to the portal and said, I'm transferring, and then decided to come back. But he missed practice, hadn't been around, and they didn't put him in. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the starting quarterback. I mean, if Stevens isn't available, Keaton Thompson's the best option, but he kind of screwed it up by leaving for a couple weeks. They could go with 4 different guys tomorrow, depending on health and who they wanted to practice with this week. So it's very intriguing to watch that, because they're a lot better team if Tommy Stevens is the quarterback. It's more of an NFL style, throwing the ball well, handing it off to Kylan Hill. But that's one of the stories to watch tomorrow. Which of the 4 quarterbacks is going to play?
Kansas State, Mississippi State, 11 a.m. kickoff in Starkville. 6:30 tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Kansas and Boston College. What is Kansas? What can Kansas do to try to keep this thing competitive? Boston College is favored by 20.5 points right now.
Well, when you look at the Kansas team, we haven't got a great read on the defense, I don't think. Nate may feel otherwise, but it's been more about the offense and what they're trying to do, going with Carter Stanley, sticking with Carter Stanley, the ups and downs, the running backs that they have to feature. But we really haven't spent a lot of time saying, what is this defense? I'm not sure who the standout players are, but I also don't look out on the field for KU and say, oh, there's a giant weakness, and there's a giant weakness. So I really wonder how they're going to hold up on the defensive side, because Boston College has run the football 70% of the time, and they've got a big-time NFL back that they can give the ball to. But the quarterback's not bad either, so they could have balance in their offense. It's mostly about the defense. If the defense held up and Boston College scored 34 points tonight, you know, it took them a while. 34 is not that bad in a college game, by the way. If you make them work for it, if it doesn't all come in the first quarter, if they get out of there, and no matter what the offense does, if Kansas scores 7 or 10 or 6 or whatever, but if they hold them to a solid 34 or under, you know, I think that's something to bounce back from. Obviously, you always hope you only get 12 games. You hope for upsets. You hope for craziness. You hope for Puka Williams to go off and make big plays. But generally, I think Boston College is better. They're at home. And I just wonder, can Kansas defense show us something? That's the question. I think we know about the offense. It may not be something you want to know about, but we do know about the offense. We don't know about the defense, in my opinion.
I mean, they've been outgained by Indiana State and Coastal Carolina. You know, I mean, I think
but,
that's...
But they weren't, you know, like easy 12-yard runs. I mean, no. It's four here, it's eight here. I'm not overly impressed with the defense, but...
Overall, it's more because the offense isn't doing anything than it is the defense. But it's one thing to hold Coastal Carolina to under 300 yards. Like you said, we'll find out when they play a team like Boston College.
Yeah, because they come off the ball. They've beaten Virginia Tech. They got a big time back. The quarterback's good. It's going to be a hard, hard game. But psychologically, it's probably better they're gone. Get away from Lawrence. It's not a good place to be when you're a football player and you lose. I mean, the cancer starts inside, okay? When your programs get torn down, it's inside. A home game is the worst thing Kansas could have right now. If this were Boston College at KU, it would be awful for the players to look up and say, oh, there's no one in the stands. No one talked about it at class today. Everyone's just saying we suck. You know, it's not good for the psyche of your football team. At least they're going to go on the road, circle the wagons, and listen to Les Miles and see if he can push the right buttons. But he did not push the right buttons last week. That was awful. The fourth quarter was badly coached. Down by five, good field goal range, 8-10 minutes left in the game. Shoot the field goal through. You're the better team, you think, and come back and win the game with a field goal later. The fourth down play calls being in a wing position, having a guy on a run a reverse on fourth and one with the guy running backwards 5 yards to get the ball and hope he's going to angle on the other side of the line against a fourth down defense. It's either going to be a touchdown or not make the first down. That's what's going to happen. It was badly played. You can blame the players, but the coaches did not support them well with the decisions they made in the fourth quarter.
All right, and before we break, Mizzou takes on SEMO, so that should be at least a breather for them before they start conference play against South Carolina. But a good bounce back for Barry Odom and his boys against West Virginia.
Very good, because what worried me most about the Wyoming game was the run defense. And obviously the big plays, totally unacceptable. I mean, those two runs that Wyoming had back-to-back shouldn't happen but about once a season against Georgia or anybody.
Right.
So I was worried. And then down after down, I didn't say, oh, that was an aberration. No one's going to be able to run on Mizzou. It's just an accident. All guys fell down or, you know, something crazy. No, I wondered about the run defense. Now, West Virginia has not established the run at all, but they're still a Big 12 school that's used to winning 8-9 games a year. They're well coached, and Missouri stuffed them. So that was good. Turnovers were giant to set the tone. Because if you go back and watch the game, I know you were there, Stephen. It wasn't as if it was Mizzou all the way until they got the interception. It could have been a little battle, like 7-0, 3 was. Did Missouri score a field goal or a touchdown first?
Touchdown.
So it could have been 7-0 for a little while.
I was standing in line trying to get my tickets for the first quarter.
You were listening on the radio?
Was furious.
I love guys who listen on the radio. You know, the people in the bathroom at games?
Yep.
And will call. You know, they get to hear us on the loudspeakers. It's great. My favorite fans of all time, starting when I started with Mitch Holtis in 1987, the ones with headphones in the stands.
Yeah.
Love those people.
Yeah.
They hold you accountable. Back before TV, now everybody holds me accountable. But before TV, I'd say, I'm broadcasting to them because if I made up something, like, oh, he leaped 5 feet in the air and dove and got a first down for the Cats. Like, no, that didn't happen at all. So
I like that voice you just used. That was good.
Yeah, I need to do some play-by-play stuff,
yeah.
Steven.
Yeah.
We've got Stan Weber in studio. We'll take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Buchady, Jake Gutierrez, and Stan Weber on this Red Friday, September 13, 2019. Okay, Stan Weber, I have the stat pack here that Jake Pounders has given me. I'm going to rattle off some significant facts and notes about the Chiefs and Raiders, and you will, I think, appreciate this as you have a great appreciation for football history. And so, including postseason games, no matchup in the league has seen more games since 1960 than the Chiefs and Raiders. This is the 121st meeting, including the postseason, most in any series since 1960. Since 1990, regular and postseason, the Chiefs are 41-18 against the Raiders since 1990. They've won 8 of their last 9 games against the Raiders. And here's an interesting fact. Joe Montana, his last regular season game ever was against the L.A. Raiders, and his final touchdown pass in the regular season was to Willie Davis in that game back on December 24th of 1994. The last game, the Chiefs won 35-3 over the Raiders. And here's the most important stat, Stan Weber. Andy Reid, as a member of the Chiefs, as head coach of the Chiefs, he is 10-2 against the Oakland Raiders. That's domination.
He beats his division foes. And thank you, Marty Schottenheimer, for turning this series over to the Chiefs, and Andy Reid has continued it on. The Raiders have done a lot of bad things, but Marty put an emphasis on it, and even though the teams might have been fairly close, the Chiefs always won. Remember, they played the playoff game at Arrowhead. One of the first wins that the Chiefs had in a playoff game was dominating Maranovich and the Raiders in Arrowhead. I think they had to play them 2 weeks in a row in that playoff run there, and they did the job. But the Chiefs are better than the Raiders right now. But you look at that whole series. Those were the two teams in the AFL. They were the two teams. You want to talk about Joe Namath? They popped in there for just a little bit. It was the Raiders and the Chiefs, the two best teams to fight for the Super Bowl. Out of the first 4 Super Bowls, they went to 3 of the 4. And the Raiders continued on and played at a high level. That series was as close as any series in the NFL until you talked about that latest run by the Chiefs. It used to be a 50-50 game. It is the most beautiful sight. I love the contrast in uniforms when they're on the field. The style, everything about them is different in a rivalry. And it is kind of significant and a little sad for me to say this is the last time we're going to play on the dirt. I kind of like how they're talking about the dirt, because the baseball infield is open with actual dirt that you do not like to slide on. It's not good for your arms, but they're going to play on the dirt here in Oakland, because until the A's finish their season, they don't put the grass in the infield area. But it is kind of sad that the Chiefs aren't going to go back to Oakland ever again. I mean, it has been so great from the start of the AFL. Al Davis is the exact opposite of Lamar Hunt, and yet those are two of the most significant players in pro football history ever. Al Davis was a commissioner. Lamar Hunt was the guy who said, let's put it together. And yet, one has class and one wears a white funny suit. They both have passed away. But it's a great rivalry. It's nice that we're dominating it. But I tell you, growing up as a kid, there was nothing more fun than turning that game on and knowing it was a 50-50 proposition.
Yeah, it's good to have villains in sports, and that's what rivalries are all about. One of the things I was thinking about, you know, we've had a lot of fun at Mike Mayock and John Gruden's expense this preseason, and maybe rightfully so with the whole clown show that was the Antonio Brown saga for them. But, you know, they had 3 first-round picks in this draft, and it's only been 1 game, but Cleveland Farrell was their first pick. He had a sack and looked pretty good in the Broncos game. We talked about Jonathan Abram. He's injured now, but played really well, and it turns out that he played that whole game with that injury, which says something about his toughness and character. And then Josh Jacobs, the running back, Steven, you talked about him. If the Raiders are going to turn into a decent team, you know, that's the biggest thing Mike Mayock was brought in to do, right? They've acquired all these draft picks, and they're trying to build through the draft. And 1 game anyways, they had 3 rookies that went out there and played really, really well in their first game.
And when you watch Hard Knocks, you usually see the warts on teams, and they don't bring out the best feel. They look better in week 1 playing on the field than they did learning about how they functioned behind the scenes. And it wasn't a great insight. It was the worst Hard Knocks ever with the Raiders. But still, you didn't go in there. You know, what does everyone say now about the Raiders?
Right. Knock if you're with me, man.
Knock if you're with me. You know, but if you wouldn't have watched that, and you just watched the Raiders play the first game, they looked good. And the main thing is Derek Carr looked awesome. He looked in control. The ball was delivered very well. The receivers are nondescript, but when you throw the ball that well and you read things, I thought Gruden had a good game calling plays. I mentioned how I didn't think KU called plays well in the fourth quarter. It made a difference in a close game. I think that you got to hand it to the play calling that they had in the game. The Raiders, it wasn't easy to win that game. The Broncos came back at the end. They had to get a first down on the last possession of the game, and they did on a 3rd and about 8. So Gruden, I'm not a big fan of saying, oh, Gruden's back and he's the dominant coach in the NFL. I don't think he's in the same league anymore. He seems to be a nice enough guy trying to get the team together. But I thought they did a good job calling plays. And the running game, he only averaged 3.7 yards a carry, Jacobs. But he seemed to be able, they didn't have to pass every down. What the Chiefs do is take you out of the game, because you can have a plan that's going to work. As an offensive coordinator, you go, I got a plan. It's going to work against this Chiefs defense. And we've seen it. It usually works against the Chiefs defense. The problem is you're down 14 to nothing and you're in your second series and the plan goes out the window. And you're saying, well, we got to throw. And now you're playing in a way you don't want to. So if the Raiders can keep balancing their offense, if they can stay close to the Chiefs one way or the other, then this could be competitive. But it's just hard to see the Chiefs' offense being slowed down. Guys, when we watched that Jacksonville game, when you saw the Chiefs gain 8 yards on first down, that was a bad play. Like, oh, man, they only gained 8. I mean, if you brought some of your soccer friends over to watch their first football game, they would think that every play should be like 15 yards and exciting. Or how about 40 yards? Oh, there's Kelce running for 40 yards. There's Watkins going for a touchdown. It looked like a video game. I mean, the Chiefs' offense is unbelievable. And Sammy Watkins, that dude looks like everything you would ever want. I'm high on him and McCoy. I've seen them play for Buffalo and what they can do. I don't know if they're going to replicate it for the Chiefs. You heard me. I'm high on McCoy even now. But I didn't know if Sammy Watkins is going to show us what he has. Whoa, Steven. You know, he is an awesome player.
You say you're high on McCoy and Watkins. Jake is high on everyone. So.
So, yeah, that kind of high I don't know much about.
Right.
That's inaccurate. I don't like being inaccurate.
Bringing up
I know
past.
Nothing about.
So
I can never get away from my past, no matter what I do.
You could give me like the most simple first grade statement about it, and I'd go, oh, I just learned something.
Yeah. So
Stay away from it.
We were driving out to interview Sammy Watkins.
Steven, are you making fun of me about being an old guy?
Am I not supposed to say hi?
These are wrong words.
I'm in a lot of trouble as a youth.
I'm locked up on him right there.
Yeah. He's never going to miss opportunities to get that in there.
I don't want to get in the way of your guys' stuff here.
Please.
You're part of this now, whether you want to be or not, Stan.
But I thought it was interesting. We were driving out to interview Sammy Watkins, which you can hear coming up in 20 minutes from now. But on the way there, I was listening to a college football podcast, and Scott Satterfield, the coach at Louisville, was the guest. And he was asked at the end of the interview, when you were out recruiting, scouting players, who's the greatest athlete in high school you ever saw? And I mean, he didn't even hesitate. He didn't go, oh, well, boy, I saw a lot of kids. He goes, Sammy Watkins, hands down. Fort Myers, Florida, I remember watching him thinking, this is the best athlete I've ever seen. I mean, that's what you're talking about there, and he's playing like it. Now, so I asked him about that, and he has a really interesting thing to say about trying to get back to that joy that he played the game with when he was in high school. Because you can get jaded by the business, you get traded, you find out that all of a sudden you got a coach that maybe doesn't like the way that you play or doesn't, you know, the system doesn't fit you as well. And guys go through that, and he looks like a guy that's rejuvenated and has a purpose right now. And I think that he's not going to go out and do what he did, you know, in week one every single week, but I think we have a chance to see maybe the best Sammy Watkins we've ever seen in the NFL.
Well, you just opened a window up that's, you know, the ugly side of being an NFL player is most of the players don't enjoy it at all. They realize it's just a business. The season's so long. They are really beat up, and they understand it doesn't matter, or they're going to get paid, they better get out there. So the joy leaves quickly. It becomes a business. Even the other players, the union tells you, oh, you know, take care of yourself. If you feel a little, if your hammy just, oh, tweaks a little bit, get out of here, because, you know, you're an independent contractor. They're going to cut you. It's hard to have the joy, and it's very rare, and it's one of the great things Andy Reid does. I think the Chiefs think about football like we do as fans. Yeah. You know how excited we are for Sunday? Steven, are you ready?
Well, I'm ready to
watch
to go
the
right
game
now.
On the dirt?
Let's go.
I mean, we are so excited, but the players, they take it for granted. They're too close to it. They see they see all the other sides of it. They're told all the time by their agents and everybody about all this stuff that's not joy. It is hard to do, and Andy Reid, I think, brings it. And you see a guy like Sammy Watkins not worried about his stats, just going out and playing, having fun, and guess what? Lighting it up. It's just something we should not it's so easy to take for granted. I do it. I turn it on. I have all kinds of NFL games on. I assume those guys are living the dream. They love being NFL players when a paycheck comes in. And when they sign a few autographs, they love that, you know, the ego stuff. And they love being an ex-player so they can talk on radio and stuff. But really, when they're in it, they lose the joy. They forget about all that stuff. Andy Reid can push buttons to get guys to play and as a team and love the game. And Sammy Watkins, He looks like a model, a football model. Stop the tape when he catches the ball and pivots to turn upfield on the first long touchdown, and you look, and what more could you want? If you were a basketball player, a football player, why wouldn't you want to look exactly like him? How tall is he?
Gosh, he's got to be 6'1", 6'2", I would think.
He looks longer than that.
Yeah.
He looks like 6'3", 220, cut perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, he turns into a running back when he catches the ball. He's listed as 6'1", 211.
Wow.
And it's lean, you know, it's a lean 6'1".
And he said it was important for him that he was playing around 215 or so, and he made some adjustments to his diet, and now he's 205 or a little bit less. And he says, and it doesn't, like, 10 pounds didn't sound like a whole lot to us, but when you're a tremendous athlete and you're already in good shape, 10 pounds and doing it the right way, he said it has made all the difference in the world, and he just feels like a different cat out there. And that's significant that he was able to figure that out. Because he's still...
He looks the best of his whole career.
Right.
Well,
and he was good at Buffalo. He could carry that extra weight and still be a star in the NFL.
But boy, you could see it. He sure looked different last week, didn't he?
And the soccer guys talk about fitness all the time. You know, you don't talk about fitness, quote-unquote. That word doesn't get thrown around in football as much because you get to go sit down while the offense, while the defense is on the field.
It's interesting you note that. I've never used that word.
It's a word that is always thrown out in soccer.
Okay.
This guy's his fitness level because you got to run 90 minutes, you know, and you never get to stop.
I'm in a fitness taco in my mouth.
Yeah.
You like that one, everybody?
But when with the way that the Chiefs play offense, fitness is a big component to what they do for a couple of reasons. Number one, they run plays quickly. They're out on the field, you know, but he has his wide receivers cover a lot of ground. For one thing, all the motion that they do before they even snap the ball. Remember what Chris Harris said last year about chasing Tyreek Hill? He was running 50 yards before the snap ever even happened.
Right.
And then they run so many vertical routes.
Well, and even bigger than that, they do more crossing routes from the right side to mm-hmm. deep left. It's not even a normal strategy,
right.
by the way.
Right.
It's not normal to say, I can line up on the right side in the slot or on the outside and run 40 yards to the other side of the field while running 40 yards downfield. But the Chiefs design stuff, and they use their speed. So you're right. And also, you don't get the three-yard run to rest. If you're a wide receiver, you get a rest. I'm not saying you're loafing. You go up to block your guy. You run 5 yards, and you say, hey, I'm going to beat you on the next play, jerk. And then you go back. You know, they talk. The Chiefs, you got to run. I mean, here goes Travis Kelce for 40 yards. Everyone's running, blocking, getting in front. But snap the ball again. Here we go for 10 yards.
Yeah.
A 10-yard run means a lot of work for a wide receiver because you got to block forever.
And you don't think about all the different those crossing patterns and go routes that Sammy Watkins runs that he never gets the ball and has to sprint all the way back to the huddle. You know, they take those guys out some, but it is. And I think Andy Reid, we talked about it in training camp a lot. I mean, Carlos Hyde's not here anymore, but I asked him what the biggest difference between this training camp and when he was with the Browns. I thought he was going to talk about all the circus show stuff with the Browns, and he said, oh, this training camp is so hard. Andy Reid makes us go out there and do these drives over and over again where we don't get to come off the field, and he makes us because he's making sure that we have our fitness level to the point. And I think that's part of his strategy, too, is they don't wear teams down, the Chiefs, by pounding the rock the entire time. They wear them down by running them all over the field. And by the fourth quarter, Chris Harris said he had to have 2 bags of IVs last year.
They run them ragged.
To keep up.
Go ahead, Sam.
I think last week, you know, kind of the headlines, LeSean McCoy looks like he's ready to roll like we hoped he was. So I think he's going to be a factor. That played out about like we thought. Sammy Watkins was great. Tyreek Hill getting hurt is a step backwards. He's a weapon. Sammy Watkins kind of blurs that because he looks so dominant, but it hurts that Tyreek Hill's there, and the defense is still yet to be determined. It didn't look dominant to me at all. So, you know, those are kind of some of the takeaways, but I think, boy, having LeSean McCoy look like a legitimate guy adds so much to this offense.
So you mentioned the defense. Clearly it's a different system, different defensive coordinator, a bunch of different players, and a bunch of different assistants, but what are some of the things that you saw that might give you hope as opposed to what we saw from Bob Sutton and his approach in the defense last year? Maybe some things that stood out to you that Spags was trying to do. I know a lot of people have asked me, you know, where was Honey Badger? They expected more from him. It's just one game. But maybe some things that might have you encouraged about the defense?
That's a great question. It's a great question because I've been as slow to say things are going to change as anybody that I've heard. I don't hear every expert talking about this, but I had less about, oh, the Chiefs are fixed on defense than almost anybody. But here, you asked the perfect question, because I can be very encouraged by something that I wish we could just sit here and watch the tape. But there were a number of running plays, and you got a running back, you know, a good back with the Jacksonville Jaguars, an attitude to want to run the football. And there were a number of times where there was a wall of red guys. Each guy held their gap, and it ended up being a two-yard run. And who made the big hit? Nobody made the big hit. That's not what great defense is about. Yeah, if you got Ray Lewis and you want to kill somebody once in a while, yeah, it looks good. But I'm telling you, they run to the left. Just in your mind, think about a play. Fournette's going to the left. He's looking for a hole, doesn't find something, slows down, finally speeds back up and says, what the heck? And there's just Chiefs all the way from his body to the sideline.
Run fits.
And he runs in. Yeah, the run fits, and he gets tackled for 1 yard. I saw a lot of that. Last year, almost every running play, someone had to make a big play, a dive to knock him over. Rarely were the shoulder pads square and someone light you up. So I thought the run defense, while it's not dominant in any sense of the word, seemed to be in the right place. And generally when Jacksonville made a run of 7-8 yards, it was more of a surprise. Last year when the ball got handed off, I kind of look ahead and can see where the blocks are unfolding, and you go, he's got 5 yards. I mean, if he doesn't get 5 yards, he tripped, someone slipped off a block. This time, I go, there's nothing there, and if he did make 8 yards, he might just bounce outside, get off of a tackle. I thought they looked much better in their run defense. I think that is encouraging, because if you can't stop the run, you can't beat New England. Forget Tom Brady. If you can't stop the run, they're going to dictate the game to you, which means Brady gets a throw when he wants to throw.
Okay, I'm just throwing this out there, and some people may resist this because he's not a corner, but I think anytime a defender becomes available, we need to at least ask the question, should the Chiefs be interested? Today, multiple reports out of Miami and Cameron Wolf on ESPN.com says the Dolphins have given permission to Minka Fitzpatrick to seek a trade, and he was the number 11 overall pick in last year's draft. 22 years old, he's under contract through 2021 plus a fifth-year option, can play either safety spot and slot cornerback, recorded 80 tackles, 9 passes defense, and 2 interceptions as a rookie. And it's said that they're asking for a first-round pick, but there was a source that claims that they would probably do it for a second-round pick. And so Minka Fitzpatrick, the number 11 overall pick from last year, if you could get him, and the Chiefs have 2 second-round picks, if you could get him for a second-round pick, I know that they have Honey Badger and they've got Thornhill. But again, you're talking about just putting talent together. I don't know. I just it's breaking this morning, and so I ask you, should the Chiefs kick the tires on Minka Fitzpatrick or just wait for a true corner?
Well, you made the question easy by saying kicking the tires. Yeah, you need to probe in there, see what you can get, evaluate things. This is where Andy Reid and Spags need to have their value. I don't think they're going to turn a defense into a dominant group. You know, I don't think Spagnuolo is going to do that. But he can make these tough decisions to say, this can up our game a little bit. Here's what I worry about. Okay, when you're all your equation, I don't want Kendall Fuller to be pulled from the slot cornerback position, okay? He is a dominant slot cornerback, third down stopper. He's not a dominant cornerback, okay? I think we say Kendall Fuller's name, we all get a warm, comfortable feeling. I do. I don't know about you guys.
Yes.
You're like, he's an NFL player.
I like
he's
him.
But
good.
I'm so happy he's moved back to the slot.
But if he gets moved, like he brings someone in who's better at the slot, or they're not going to be better at the slot. If that's the position they have to play, and then you move Fuller, it's like going out and moving baseball infielders from their position and saying, oh, you know, Moustakas is a good third. You know, he's our third baseman, but this kid coming up can only play third, so now I'm going to play him at second. That doesn't work. You don't take a good third baseman and make him play second and think that you've advanced your roster. You see what I'm saying? They
yes.
need a fit.
Yep.
Kick the tires. They know better than me, Steven. I can't tell you, but here's what I'm watching. Kendall Fuller's the best at the slot. I don't want to see him play anywhere else. He's as good as anybody in the NFL as a third cornerback. He doesn't dominate out when he gets pushed to the outside. So if that's what they end up doing, I don't think they get anywhere. So you better be careful of what kind of draft stock you have. But anything you want to do to shoot for the Super Bowl now, I would not be upset with. It's 2015 Royals.
Right.
They were there on the cusp in 14, and in 15 they had to make some tough calls and make moves. I'm not a big advocate that you have to make those moves to win. I know all you baseball guys say they have to do that, or you're not even trying. I don't know about that, but it's okay if you try. And in the NFL, this is something that I think Brett Veach does very well. After training camp's over and the rosters are being set around the NFL, I think he does a very good job evaluating, does this guy fit? Does he advance us? Is it worth a draft pick? How does it fit into salary cap? I think he does that very well. Don't know how great a drafter he is yet. I'm not saying anything negative, but I think he's very good at this movement. And he's so smart. They're shoulder to shoulder. Spags can walk in the room. Yes, you kick the tires, but I wouldn't criticize them if they don't pick him up. I think they could win the Super Bowl with this roster. They don't need anybody else.
I think what you're pointing out is that he just might not be exactly what the Chiefs need unless they think he can go out and play on the corner. The argument that he's had in Miami is they've been playing him at strong safety, and he doesn't want to play there. He flat out said in training camp, I'm not big enough to play strong safety, but that's what the coach wants me to do right now. He said, quote, I'm not 215 pounds, 220 pounds, so playing in the box isn't best suited for me, but that's what coach is asking me to do. His mom went on social media during training camp and blasted the team for putting him at strong safety. I think he wants to play free safety or in the slot. The thing is, like, if they really think that Juan Thornhill is going to be a really good player, which they seem to think, and they feel like Kendall Fuller is best suited in the slot, it just doesn't seem like he's the perfect fit for what they need. They need a corner, right? Like, that's what we all feel like. They need an upgrade over Tre'Davious Ward, most likely, and they maybe need a linebacker. I mean, I think that's what we've all felt like are the two biggest upgrades they need to make on defense. But maybe those guys aren't available.
I'm not
going to
opine.
It
may be a fit. They can decide better than us. But the thing that they've done, if they did something like this, Stephen, it'd be the second time with, you know, Cowboys early draft pick at cornerback that's suspended for 4 weeks, right? They got guys who have raw talent. You mentioned talking about Sammy Watkins when he was young. That isn't the end-all, be-all, but it's a great story when they become a pro. But the fact is when you get top-level, top-10, top-15-type NFL talent, and you get a chance to give them a new start to life, it's not a bad place to start to bring him in this environment. So, I just say question mark. I don't get to study him well enough and how he'd fit into this unit, but he's going to have to be, he has to play some well that helps, not keep Thornhill on the sideline. That doesn't do you any good. But if it keeps Sorensen on the sideline a little bit more, you know, he plays one-third of the plays, the Chiefs are good.
Thank you very much for saying that. Because as of a couple of weeks ago, there's been arguments for Dan Sorensen to be on the field. As long as that's an option, you could always use Minka Fitzpatrick.
Dan Sorensen, it's okay for – it's not a sin for him to be on the field. It's when the Chiefs, again, dictate that they want him on the field. He has a place in the NFL. He does good things. He can play one-third of the plays, and shouldn't be upset.
That's what he did this last week.
12 snaps.
Of the plays, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying, the New England Patriots use guys like Dan Sorensen, and they dominate with him because they decide when he goes in the game. And they go, he's the best on this 3rd and 7 against this team covering this deal. You know, maybe it's a run-pass option. And this team on 3rd and 5 truly is a team that could run or pass. And you need someone who really has great experience and can decipher what's going on. And Dan Sorensen may be the guy. You see what I'm saying? If he's used when the Chiefs want him out there, rather than saying, he's just the best guy, get him out there. I'm not blasting Dan Sorensen, but he shouldn't be out there every down. It should be a Bill Belichick style. Let's put him in when we want to have him in. But we need Thornhill out there. I said I wanted Thornhill to play when he deserved it, not just because Sorensen should play if he's the better player. You got to beat him out. And I think that's a great sign that they put him out there. And
those
he played
5-1
well.
In snaps.
One of the things
that's good news for the Chiefs,
because
he should only play when he beats him out. And he looked like he should have been the starter.
One of the things I think we should remember about Brett Veach, too, is what his evaluation is of a player could be different than another organization, and he's willing to make trades based off that. He might think that Minka Fitzpatrick can play corner. That might have been his evaluation, you know, coming out of the Senior Bowl or whatever. And so if he evaluates a guy a certain way, he's been willing to trade for guys that he feels like, you know, didn't work out somewhere else because he thinks they can be used in a different way. So.
And don't forget the thing I said earlier. The mindset of most NFL players is a dulled dissatisfaction with life. And her mom wants to tweet if she doesn't tweet because everybody's mad. You know, I'm not being treated properly. My contract's not well. It's good. Someone else got the money, the salary cap. You take a person from another team and bring them to a team where there's a positive attitude, it is a whole different world. And that's what the Chiefs have, is a warm place where people's sadness turns into a smile. You walk in the locker room, and you have a whole new lease on life. It is very rare in the NFL. And Belichick, he does it a whole different way. It's old school. There's no smiles in New England, but that sets the tone that even Brady doesn't have a good time at practice. So New England wins because it's the military, okay? You know, you guys want to we want to go out and wrestle and have some fights, and then we bring in some Marines, and you, who do you think is going to win? I mean, Stephen's strong, and he can punch well, but the Marines are going to kick our ass, okay? The Patriots do that. They have a different mentality. But other than the Patriots, the Chiefs are the best place to play in the NFL to come in and say, wow, they have fun around here. They want to win. Things are going from the owner all the way down to the equipment guy and even Mitch Holtis. Everybody wants to win.
I don't know why Stan wants my ass kicked, but we'll that note, we'll take a break.
You'd be in the front of the line for us, though, thanks, against those Marines.
We will have
maybe
Sammy
maybe
Watkins.
Jake.
I know,
yeah,
Jake's
in good shape.
No, Jake goes first.
and depending what state he's in, what you guys are telling me, he may not know better.
Yeah,
he may just dive right in there. Yeah.
5 years ago, maybe.
Right, as long as he's not in Wisconsin, we should be fine.
True story.
We will take a break. When we come back, we will
just
have
a bench warrant.
Sammy Watkins on the show. Listen to our interview with Chiefs wide receiver Sammy Watkins up next. Stan, thank you very much for the time, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Sammy Watkins on the show next on Sports Radio 810 WHB.